Hi, this is Ian Pickus, sitting in this week on the Capital Connection. Up next, we speak with New York State Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal of Manhattan. The Democrat chairs the Assembly Housing Committee, meaning she was in the middle of one of the key unresolved issues this past session. We'll talk about that and much more with the Assemblywoman from the 67th District, up next.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Ian Pickus, sitting in this week, and my guest is longtime New York State Assembly member Linda Rosenthal, a Democrat from the 67th District in Manhattan. Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal, welcome back to the show.
Why, thanks. Good to be here.
Well, to begin with, we're speaking just after the session, and people who pay close attention to Albany will know that legislators in your chamber came back to do some unfinished business. So now we've reached a different part of the year for New York State lawmakers. What are you working on today?
What am I working on today? Well, I'm reviewing what happened throughout the session, look at bills that passed, look at bills that didn't pass, planning for next January. And, of course, now being in my district all the time, which is great, since when you're in Albany, like, for example, in March, we're mostly in Albany, and so you don't get to, you know, speak directly to constituents. So I've been out and about and meeting people and just being happy to be here.
What do people in your district worry about the most in terms of, you know, issues they bring to you, their state lawmaker?
Well, I think housing has been one of the top issues that I've encountered since my election in 2006. And there's always evictions. There's always seniors who need SCRE, senior citizen rent increase exemption, that freezes their rent. So there's always that. I mean, people are concerned with a wide variety of things, but housing seems top of mind for most at this moment.
Obviously, this is one of the key issues of the past legislative session. Governor Hochul had her plan. You chair the Housing Committee. And ultimately, there was not a grand agreement on housing this time around. How come?
Well, you know, I was quite hopeful initially. Of course, I initially thought that through the budget process, even though there were so many housing issues jammed into the executive budget, I thought that this was an opportunity to accomplish something, to take care of some tenant issues, to take care of some development issues. You know, it was an opportunity. Unfortunately, you know, nothing much came of that. Although we did, and this isn't highlighted because it's kind of detailed, but we did fund several programs that are essential to keeping both homeowners and NYCHA residents and people with Section 8, you know, tenants in their homes. So one thing is called NPP, and the other is RPC, neighborhood protection plan or something like that. They work throughout the state, as do the rural protection, and they help people stay in their homes. So last year we funded the NPPs at $12.93 million. This year we gave them $17.6 million, which is tremendous because they, you know, when tenants have issues, they go to these smaller organizations. Like I have housing conservation coordinators, for example. I have the SRO Law Project, for another example. So they help individual tenants and buildings with tenant issues. They help them stay housed. So that was great. And then the same for rural areas. They have lots of issues as well. So that was a big step. We also funded to the tune of $40 million, something called HOP, which helps people who are in danger of losing their housing because of mortgage defaults. And this is something the governor actually did not fund in her executive budget. And everyone was really kind of surprised about that because it's so essential. At the end of the day, in the final budget, there was $40 million. And everybody loves and uses that program. It was $35 million last year, and this year was $40 million. So we did do that. We did, NYCHA and the other housing authorities around the state really were in trouble because they were at the bottom of the ERAP list, which meant that by the time selection got to them, there's no money left from the federal funding. And so we needed to help them out. So we gave $391 million in the budget for ERAP funds for public housing residents across the state. And we also gave, I think it was around $189 million for Section 8 developments, where there really would have been some defaults had we not helped pay arrears for tenants. So, you know, COVID may be almost over or over in some people's minds, but the problems remain on many fronts. But certainly in housing, people couldn't afford to pay rent. Some small landlords, you know, were just left high and dry. And so, you know, we did manage to fix some of those issues. You know, problems are never fixed, but we made a dent. So that part, you know, I am proud of. The bigger issues, so at some point we had a working group. It was the speaker appointed members, and I was on it, and the Senate appointed members, and we worked through various issues and came up with some concrete proposals to deal with extension of 421A, housing access voucher program, affordable housing rehab program, creation of the Office of Civil Representation, good cause eviction. There was something for everyone in the plan that we came up with. However, it seemed that we couldn't come to an agreement with the governor. And obviously to pass a bill into law, you need the Senate, the Assembly, and the governor. It seemed clear, according to the Speaker and the Majority Leader, that that wasn't going to happen with the package we came up with. So, that was a real shame because there is a tremendous housing crisis. You know, you don't have to be follower of housing issues to know that. People have their own personal experience. They see people in their buildings moving out. I mean, the crisis for market rate tenants is also tremendous because during COVID, people got leases with lower rents. And then once it was their leases were up, they got tremendous increases, you know, thousands of dollars a month increase. And who can afford that? And that was part of why good cause was important, because right now, market rate housing, they have no rights to a new lease, no rights to stay there. They have no protections. And, you know, I had a constituent who'd been in her apartment for like 10 years. And she got a tremendous increase. And she came here and said, is there anything I can do? And we said, you know, you can try to have a discussion with the landlord, but they're under no obligation to keep you in that unit, even if you've paid your rent on time every month, even if you've been a great tenant. You know, they think they can get another $2,000 a month. Okay, then you're out. And that kind of, that really disrupts communities.
Let me just, while I have a second, define some terms for people who might be listening. I don't know all of them, but NYCHA, that's the New York City Housing Authority. ERAP, you mentioned the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, and 421A, which gives a property tax credit for multi-unit housing. I just want to make sure people know what we're talking about here.
Sorry.
That's fine.
I'm jargon that you don't know.
You're the chair of the committee. It makes sense.
Yes, yep. I guess. But yeah, thank you. Thank you for doing that. I recently had a constituent who lives in a market rate apartment stop by, and she said that the landlord refused to offer her renewal lease. And the reason is because she'd once asked him if he could take a look at what she thought was mold in her living room, which is a hazardous condition and something that a property owner needs to remediate. He said to her, you asked me about that, and because it was uninhabitable, she should find a new place to live. So when you're asking for repairs or, you know, to address a situation, that shouldn't be used against you. Anyway, she had to move, even though she'd been a part of the neighborhood for 10 years. So, you know, that's part of the good cause, which good cause means that the property owner needs a good cause to evict you.
Well, let me ask you this then. Is Governor Hochul's plan to add 800,000 units, that would offer more options for people who might be in a situation like that one? Obviously, that didn't come together this year, but is there a way to achieve that and the tenant protections you're talking about?
Well, that's what we thought. You know, we thought that that was something. I believe that we need more housing across the state, but that doesn't get built in a year. That takes years.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a crisis right now, which is why we need to offer greater protections for tenants who are struggling because they can't pay the rent. Or, you know, I've met people in Albany, and they said that, you know, their landlord said, get out. Just, I don't like the way you look, get out. And they have no recourse. They really should go to court and be evicted, but a lot of people really can't deal with that, can't afford a lawyer, rather not go through that, and they leave. And good cause would have helped someone like that. In fact, Albany legislature voted to have good cause legislation. And so did many other places, Kingston, Beacon, Poughkeepsie, Newburgh, City of Albany.
Some of those have faced court challenges, though. Judges have found them, have tossed them.
Absolutely. The courts have said this is something that the state government needs to act on, which is what we were trying to do. And the compromise that we had fashioned in the final bill that the working group came together about was it would only apply to New York City, and counties across the state could opt in. There was a provision that rents could be increased by 5% plus the CPI as high as 10%. Consumer price index, yes. So there was ample, you know, response to those who said that it wasn't good enough. And it also, importantly, exempted small landlords. So the exact number wasn't final, but it would have been 6 or 8 or 10. Someone who has that many units would not be part of the good cause. That is to address a lot of the criticism that we heard from small landlords. So it really, I think, was a good compromise. Would I have preferred the original bill? Of course. But, you know, legislation is often the art of compromise. And so we had done that. Unfortunately, the landlord lobby seems to have a strong grip on things here.
Well, let me ask you about the politics of it then. As you mentioned, there was a legislative deal announced very late in the session, a two-way agreement that didn't include the governor. For her part, yeah. Governor Hochul said this has started an important conversation. You know, it's obviously going to come back up in the next session. Are you optimistic that things will be different in January?
Well, you know, we do have about 6 months to hash this out. I'm disappointed we didn't do this now because we had hashed it out. And perhaps the governor, you know, wanted to play a bigger role. I don't know. But by passing a law or by passing bills, we could have had that discussion, you know, under a formal framework. That didn't happen. You know, I think we absolutely do need to build housing everywhere, but we also need to build affordable housing everywhere. And those 800,000 units, none of them were required to be affordable. I mean, look who's leaving New York. There was a report in the New York Times that 200,000 black families already had left because they couldn't afford the rent. And this is not confined to people with lower incomes. It is across the board, except for people who are very wealthy. Where I live in Manhattan, there are 5 new developments. They are all luxury. And they're not full. You know, I think in one of them, nobody's even living in it. And so clearly, developers will build luxury housing. Developers will build units for millionaires and multimillionaires and billionaires. What they don't do is build enough affordable housing. And so that's the part of the crisis that is before us that we must address. And building housing for the future, yes, important. Has to be affordable. Part of it has to be affordable. And in the meantime, you know, we have to keep people in their homes.
What about local leaders who said, you know, we have enough density here already and this plan is going to put a burden on a locality, adding X number of units?
Right. And that's why in the bill that the working group was crafting, there was a provision that localities had to create their own local affordable housing plan. So give the power to the localities, which they have, but have them do it. And so they can be part of creating the future of that community. And I think that was a good approach. We also proposed both houses an incentive program. And I think that could have worked as well. But it's something we need to keep discussing because, you know, in some communities it seems to be a no-brainer. In other communities that don't have land, don't have any place to develop near transit. So one size doesn't fit all. And I think that was the original plan, was in certain areas you have to build 3%, in other areas 1%, but that doesn't work everywhere. So if localities come up with their own plans, I think that would be a much better fit.
Let me reintroduce you. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with New York State Assembly Member Linda Rosenthal on the Capitol Connection, a Democrat from the 67th District in office since 2006. I have many more issues to ask you about. Let me jump to another one now. The governor was in New York City the other day to talk about the congestion pricing plan, which would affect people heading into your neck of the woods. What do you think of it?
Well, you know, when Mayor Bloomberg originally proposed it, I was a supporter, and I'm a supporter of congestion pricing now. I think it is one good way to fund the MTA, but it is also necessary in terms of cutting down pollution and cutting down on congestion in the area below 60th Street. So, yeah, I'm all for it.
You had called for some exemptions, I think, especially with regard to people with disabilities who might not have another way to get into Manhattan. How would that work?
Well, there is a board that has been set up that will review all the requests for exemptions. So, for example, if somebody lives within the zone, it's obviously not fair if every time they go in and out, they're charged. So
$23 every day.
Well, up to 23. It could be less. It depends on the time of day. So it could be much lower. But I think the agreement some years ago, and it was like 3 or 4 years ago when we passed this, people earning below $60,000 would get credits, so they wouldn't have to pay that. And I think among the discussions are people with disabilities who truly, you know, have no way of getting around. You know, they should have exemptions. There's a push to have yellow cabs exempted. And I think all those are under discussion with that group that will determine the final prices and the final exemptions.
Let me ask you about another current issue in at least the headlines. You live there, I don't. But New York City is being described in sometimes apocalyptic terms right now as being unsafe, particularly the subways. Is that what you're seeing?
I think there are incidences on the subway. There are people with mental illness. But I take the subway all the time. And I know many people do, and it's often very crowded. So while there are people who need a lot of help, I do think on the whole it is safe. But we certainly need more money for mental health problems. And the governor did put a lot of money in the budget for mental health issues. I mean, there are, and this is actually not a problem isolated to New York. It's a nationwide issue with people with mental illness, people with unstable housing. You know, we have to address this holistically. We can't just say, well, there's crime in the subway, New York's going to pop. You know, there are actually decreases in certain categories of crime. And I think crime has started to decrease certain categories. And so something, you know, it's a process. And I think more mental health aid, helping people, getting people housing is a giant step toward curing the problem.
A lot of Democrats have complained about the way New York City Mayor Eric Adams has discussed this issue in particular. How do you think the mayor's doing so far?
How do I think the mayor's doing? It depends on the issue. One area where I'm very disappointed is the fact that there are so many vacancies in crucial agencies. For example, HPD, Housing Preservation and Development Agency, HRA, Human Resources Administration, places where staff is responsible for getting processing vouchers for people to move into housing, agencies that are responsible for processing the SNAP, food stamp applications. They're suffering from high percentage of vacancy. And so the wheels of government that are necessary to implement good laws and policies aren't available. I know it's a tough job. I mean, it's all often been said it's the second toughest job in America. I think the mayor just said the other day he doesn't think it's a tough job. Kudos to him, but, you know, if he believes that. But there's always more room for communication, collaboration, and best practices. The city council voted on bills about kicking people out of shelters, and he's going to veto them, which I think is a big mistake. So there needs to be more joint decision-making. I know he's the mayor, he's got that job, but there are things that council members and advocates are talking about that I think he should listen to more closely.
He used to be in the state legislature, of course. Do you know each other well? Do you talk to him?
He was a state senator a while ago. We talked about various issues in the past. I think we did talk about some animal issues. And certainly I've met with his commissioners, and I've talked to him on occasion about housing in particular.
Well, you brought up animals. You have worked on a number of animal protection measures over the years. What's the latest issue that's troubling you now?
Well, one of my proudest accomplishments was last year we passed a law that bans the sale of cats, dogs, and bunnies in pet stores. And because that's part of the puppy mill problem that results in many animals that are bred in horrific conditions that have genetic problems. Then they're sold to consumers for thousands of dollars, and it's unwittingly going to cause heartache for them because many of these animals cannot be, quote, fixed. They have genetic problems. And then the person spends so much money on vet care, and it's really a terrible, insidious problem. One way to shut down the pipeline to New York City, where there are about 60, 70 pet stores, is to shut it down. So that one I'm very happy about. I'm also very happy about another bill that I passed into law, the Adult Survivors Act, which allows people who were sexually abused at the age of 18 or over but missed the window where they could bring a lawsuit. We extended a one-year look-back window. And that's how E. Jean Carroll actually
sued
Donald Trump. So, you know, state issues and state laws have local implication, but also national implication. And part of the great thing about that is that inspires other states to take similar action. But I think the E. Jean Carroll, I'm very, very proud of that. And there are five more months for those who believe they have a case against someone or the institution that harbored them. They have until November 23rd to bring their case in court.
We have time for one more question. Let me ask you this. We've mentioned a couple of times that you were first elected in 2006. What do you wish you knew about this job and its responsibilities then that you know now?
Well, that's a great question, but I think when I began, I knocked on every door, so to speak, because I didn't know the right door. I didn't know which door needed to be open to advance policies, advance bills. And I think that was a very successful formula because I've passed, you know, hundreds of bills and into law. And that's the way you have to do it. You have to talk to everyone. You have to be collaborative. You have to discuss ideas with your colleagues. And I think I've done that throughout my tenure. So I don't think of course you need to know the ins and outs of being an assembly member, and that you just need experience. But I think that method of being persistent, and I think I have that reputation of being unrelenting when I want to get something done. And I've carried that philosophy for the past 17 years.
Again, New York State Assemblywoman Linda Rosenthal from the 67th District. I'm Ian Pickus, sitting in this week for David Gustina. Assemblywoman Rosenthal, thank you for taking all this time to speak with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a great discussion. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Capital Connection.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Gustina.